If you like what we do and you want to throw us a few, go out to patreon.com/y'allheard. Yeah, that's patreon.com/y'allheard.
Y'all heard?
One, two, three.
Hey, everybody.
This is Y'all Heard, a podcast where me, Marissa Phillips,
and me, Pete Phillips,
are not related, and
we fire up a melting furnace so that we can forge for you from melted brass a buckle that you can wear on your hat like a pilgrim. But the buckle is knowledge, and you are a genius.
Just want to let you know that was the least upsetting one you've ever done. When they're not food related,
thank you.
They're not upsetting. I thought you were going to, I don't know why, something you said, I thought you were going to talk about fondue, and then I was going to be really angry. I'm so glad you did it.
A brass fondue.
No, you said fire up, but I don't know. Yeah. Like, you know, fire up the fondue pot.
Maybe next show.
Yeah, I don't know. Something really... So thank you. Thank you for upsetting me the least since we started this podcast. In other words, you tell you things we didn't know we needed... No, we knew that. In other words, we tell you you didn't... In other words, we tell you things you didn't know you needed to know.
How you doing over there?
I'm drinking, guys.
We're recording two episodes today, and careful listeners, Marissa gets tired and loopy, so...
Yeah, so I apologize. So, Pete, in the how are you, why don't you help me? Okay, so there are things that you say that you know are going to bother me, like literally get under my skin. But there are people that know me less that seem jarred when I'm upset by certain things.
I feel like I have to just defend myself a bit if anybody's listening for the first time. I'm not, like, trying to, like, really piss you off or anything.
Yeah, and also, Steve, so you know that. I don't literally get full of rage and we get in a fight. I mean, I'm just like, ew.
In the last episode, I said morsel of clementine.
Yeah, and I'm upset. But again, by upset, I mean it grosses me out. I don't mean that, like, we stop being friends.
This podcast is done.
Okay, and again,
you take your morsel of clementine and shove it up your ass.
So when I say Pete upsets me, I feel like he knows what I mean. Like, it's fine. It's like a funny. It's more like a, like, haha, that's annoying. I feel like all I do is talk about my boyfriend. I have no friends. Just so you know that. Short of Pete and one other person. Pete doesn't live here. All I do is spend time with my boyfriend or by myself with 90210. Pete, you're going to be like, why? Don't ask why. Just listen. Instead of... Okay. I'm just going to hope he never listens to this. No, maybe I shouldn't say this. Okay, sometimes, you know, when you say, like, balls to the wall, or be like, my balls, like, if someone says, like, do this, I was like, my balls, I'll do that, you know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
Like, I just want to say that this isn't ever said in, like, a sexual way, but it's said in, like, a way like that, like, so, because it bothers me, my boyfriend periodically says, because I think he said it once, either, I don't know, it'd be funny or by mistake, and it upset me so much, so now he does it, and now he keeps doing it, and it makes me angrier and angrier. He says, it hurts me to even utter it. Can I just spell it and you say it? Instead of saying ball, he'll say B-A-L-L-S-H.
That guy's nonsense.
So we're at Target, and I think I picked up mozzarella balls, and he says, oh, that? I'm not going to say the word. And I was like, I hate you sometimes. I'm going to go home.
$12.99 for mozzarella balls? My balls.
So he says, balls. Ugh. Kill me. Anyway. So, he says,
I gotta say this too, just to go back, and I know that nobody's like, I hope nobody's thinking this, and I'm not trying to harp on it, but when I come up with morsel of clementine, I've not thrown that at Marissa before. So it's not like I'm doing this, where I found something that skeeves her out a little bit, and so I'm gonna keep saying it over and over again, hoping that one day I'll desensitize her to the madness of a made-up word for testicles.
And again, when I say it upsets me, I don't jump out a window. I'm just like,
maybe you should, though.
I'm just like, ew, that upsets my ears. So for some reason, even though I get annoyed every time he says it, he's like, does that, like, really upset you? Like, for real? And I was like, I can't explain it. Certain sound combinations are very grating to my ear. And he was like, what? How would you describe why certain things like that? If I had to describe to someone why certain things make me angry, like bulge and morsels of clementine, what? How would you explain that?
I think it translates to other senses as well. Like, you know, if you smelled pumpkin, maybe that's like, ooh, I don't really like the smell of pumpkin. I don't want to be around a pumpkin. Whatever.
Yeah, okay.
But like, you're like, oh, like, but I do like
smell bad.
Yeah.
Okay.
And like, same thing with like seeing things. You're like, I don't like that couch. Why don't you like that couch? I just don't like the way that it looks. Like, it doesn't appeal to me in some, you know, I don't know, something like that, yeah, where there's just a sensibility about it. But I think the other, like, at least in this particular case, I cannot think of any words that have Alsh in them.
I hate it.
Like,
I hate it so
of course,
much.
Dylan Walsh, of course. But, like, when you're talking about the English language, I can't think of many places where that exists. Feel free to call us 570-PODWAT1.
Brandon Walsh know. From 90210.
Right. That's sorry, I said Dylan. But yeah, absolutely.
No, you said I talked over you.
No, it's okay.
I'm very impressed that you said that.
So, like, you have that, right? But other than that, and again, proper noun, last name, I can't think of anything. And so I think you have to go to a place where you're like, well, there's a reason it doesn't exist commonly in the English language.
It's and upsetting. That's because it sounds emotionally. This is why me and Pete are best friends, by the way.
Because
I,
like,
don't really need to explain myself.
Yeah, and you know, flavors too, right?
Yeah.
Like, I can eat spinach, but I don't love the flavor of it. I know that it's good for me, and I'll eat it anyway. But, like, it doesn't mean I'm like, yummy spinach. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just, certainly doesn't seem like you have to hear it, so.
Yeah, okay. So that's how I am. Unpacking why Balch upsets me to such a degree. Why should I have to do that? Why should anyone have to spend time unpacking the term Balch? I don't know.
B-A-L-L-S-H.
Anyway, Pete, how are you?
Balch is a town in Albania.
Oh, okay. I think
you should be like, next time you do that, I'm going to give you a Balch tap.
Last time I did that, there's a term he doesn't like, a phrase.
Vagina?
No. When he's tired, I said, oh, are you the sleepy weepy? And he gets filled with rage. I don't know how I have a relationship that functions, FYI.
That aligns with some of our history in terms of language that people you know choose.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Anyway, Pete, tell me about your life, please.
This week, yesterday, a coworker of mine gave me a little bag that had snacks in it. Because she knows, how much.
Snacks, he means weed snacks.
I didn't say weed snacks.
I know. But that's all I can think of that's in a little bag.
Because she knows how much work sucks and how much I can't stand to go there lately. And there was a nice little card inside. And she wrote,
when can you ever stand to go there? I'm sorry.
She wrote a little message, and it made me feel better about having to walk into a political battlefield and a communication nightmare.
Oh, God.
Every single day of the week.
I'm sorry, Pete. Why did they give you?
There were 2 peanut butter cups, a Kit Kat bar, some popcorn, some Lifesavers, you know, just some random stuff.
That's sweet.
And it goes a long way because so many other people can be shitty.
Mm-hmm.
Although everybody, I have to say this, step back from time to time, look around, and try to take stock of your situation, because I go around thinking that everybody doesn't like me at work when really I'm just focusing on one person that doesn't like me at work. And it makes me feel like other people don't too. So always sort of step back, look at the situation on the whole, and then, you know, I might say check yourself.
On the flip side, I will say, it's worth noting, two people I looked in the eye today, and I said hello, and they ignored me. So a lot of people seem to not like me and my job. Anyway, continue.
That's really all I got in terms of, I mean, wanted to focus on some good this week.
That's nice.
Another thing that keeps happening. So I was away, related to this, just because it's related to work, I was away and out of work for a couple of days, and my boss texted me, and he goes, "Do not respond to the email that came in last night."
Okay.
Because he thought I would be upset and, like, you know, write something.
Oh,
offensive.
No.
And I was like, cool, okay. And then I put my phone down, and I was like, to my mom, who I was staying with. I was like, that was my boss. He told me not to read this email because I would get upset. And later that day, she's like, "So did you read the email?" And I'm like, "No." And the next day, she goes, "So did you read the email?" "Yeah, what was in the email?" And I was like, "I'm not going to read it." And I read it on Monday morning, and I just laughed. I just laughed and laughed. Oh. And yesterday, I went to get into my car, and there was a napkin on my windshield. And I was like, "What is this shit? Who put a napkin on my windshield?" And I got out of the car, I took it off, and it says, "You have a nail in your back, right?" And I was like, ha, 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 ha.
Pete, what?
And then I drove to get my tire changed.
Are you okay?
I don't know. So, for an icebreaker.
Icebreaker.
I always found this interesting. I know that this isn't going to be interesting, but I always found this to be an interesting question. When you pick up a pen to test
to
see if it...
The fuck are you going with this?
When you pick up a pen and you're testing it to see if it works, like if it has ink, what do you write? And what do you think that says about you?
I just scribble on my hand.
That's more interesting than I could have thought.
Okay. I don't write anything. What do you write?
You just, like, what do your scribbles look like? Are they, like, loopy loops? Are they scribble scribbles?
No, I just do, like, back, forth, back, forth, back, forth. Sometimes I'll do it on a paper, but generally I feel like, because, okay, this is not interesting, but if you have a flat piece of paper just on a hard surface, usually it won't do anything. Usually you have to test it out on something soft, and I feel like my hand is more easily accessible than finding something to put under the paper, and I don't care if I'm a mess. Because I pride myself on being a mess, so I don't beat paper. So that's that.
You know what I found about your pen dilemma, and you will not do this. If it's a ballpoint pen, and you go to write on the paper and it's not writing, but you know it has ink in it, you can lick the tip, and that will get the ball. That will get the ball rolling, and then it works.
The ball's rolling.
Yep.
Yeah, I'm not gonna do that, but thanks.
Just lick the tip of the ball.
Ew! Ew!
Sorry, Marissa.
Okay.
This
is a dark day.
This is the thing. I remember hearing in just on some bullshit radio fact thing, somebody was like, a majority of people write their name when they pick up a pen to see if it works.
Really? And
I always write...
I thought everyone did what I did.
I always write, hello.
Pete, you're an adorable person.
I don't know what that says about me.
Guys, it says Pete's an adorable person. He is an adorable person. Though Pete is a man full of fury, he's also, like... Sometimes he just does things and you're like an innocent dewdrop.
There are times with me where I'm just like, what is wrong with you?
Well, that was one of your innocent dewdrop moments, Pete.
Speaking of innocent dewdrops, I'm going to tell you guys about a guilty dewdrop.
What the fuck?
This week, I'm going to dip into history again and tell you about...
guilty dewdrop.
And tell you about Liz Carmichael.
Cool.
To tell you
how I... was going to say something, then I stopped myself.
Okay.
Not important. Anyway.
Congratulations on your restraint. I know that I complained about work earlier in the episode, and I will continue to do so. There are times when I come home and I'm just like, it's not like I'm super wound up or anything. It's just like I have to turn my brain off for a little bit. And a lot of times an easy way to do that is just put on the TV, something to just look at, not something that I have to think about and anything.
Uh-huh.
So a lot of times, they started airing this channel locally that has like true crime stuff on it, and they have Unsolved Mysteries reruns. So I put on Unsolved Mysteries and I just zone out.
Mm-hmm.
Except I couldn't zone out one day.
Why?
Because they talked about this story, and I couldn't understand why it was a brief segment on Unsolved Mysteries, and it was not its own feature film. And it's the story of Liz Carmichael.
Okay.
In 1973, perhaps your parents have talked about this, Marissa, there was an oil crisis, and
I don't know.
In school...
Wait,
in
73. Oh, okay.
My mom has mentioned a couple of times when there were like lines at the gas station and things like that. So prices were high. People were panicking because they couldn't drive their cars places. It was a crisis. And so, of course, there has to be some drama behind it. So even back then, people were thinking, how can we avoid something like this happening again? Like an oil crisis. And that was what Dale Clift, C-L-I-F-F-T, was thinking when he conceived a lightweight three-wheeled car. Later, he met Liz Carmichael, who saw this as a great opportunity. In short time, she had millions of dollars in backing from private parties and also talked of a 150,000-square-foot assembly plant in Burbank, California, with over 100 employees on the payroll.
Okay.
A number of the employees were ex-cons, but we don't know that yet.
Okay.
The car, which she called Dale, based on its creator, was extraordinary. By eliminating a wheel in the rear, we saved 300 pounds and knocked more than $300 from the car's price. It weighs less than 1,000 pounds, but that does not affect its stability or safety. The low center of gravity always remains inside of the triangle of the three wheels, so it's impossible to tip over. She said that she drove it into a wall at 30 miles per hour and there was no structural damage to the car, despite the lightweight material that it's made out of.
Mm-hmm.
The Dale was powered, but this is just, this whole thing is copy-pasted, but this is the part that sounds the most copy-pasted. The Dale was powered by a thoroughly revamped BMW two-cylinder motorcycle engine, which generated 40 horsepower and would allow the car to reach 85 miles per hour.
BMW and, motorcycle? I don't understand what that is.
Yeah, they took the engine from a motorcycle, put it in a car, and you can travel fast enough to go back to the future.
Okay.
She expected sales of 88,000 cars in the first year, 250,000 in the second year.
Mm-hmm.
This is what went out to the media, and investors seemed very interested in getting in on the ground floor. She amassed $30 million. $30 million in the early 70s.
That's a lot, right? That's crazy.
Right. To move forward with this company, and there would be high volume production by mid-1975. At this point, your traditional car company would be building prototypes of the Dale, having them tested for safety, having them tested with the EPA for any, like, I don't know, emissions or environmental type things, all those kinds of things. But Carmichael didn't do that. She chose to go a different way. She started selling stock in the company and selling dealership options to car dealerships around the country.
Okay.
In 1975, one of her company's salesmen was found. I made a typo.
Yes?
It says, was found shit in the head. No, one of her salesmen was found.
That's way more haunting than shot in the head. Like, not even joking.
Shot in the head four times in a hotel in Encino, California, which is also where the company headquarters is. The prime suspect was another employee of the company, an employee that the dead guy had previously served time with in jail.
Okay.
Yes, a suspicious murder raises suspicion. I should have written that better. And authorities began sniffing around the company for clues. So, she runs to Texas, where, God bless old times, she started the scam up again.
Oh.
This time, it was a model called the Revell, and the Revell was actually featured as the Showcase Showdown prize on The Price is Right, but the contestant couldn't guess the value of it correctly, and so they didn't win the car. Because if they had, they would have received nothing because the cars didn't exist. All the stuff that she was saying was bullshit.
Okay.
And they had a sort of, like, body of the car and, like, some wheels, But the inside was, like, empty. It was just, like, on a 2x4, if I remember right from one of the articles.
Oh, wow, okay.
Resting on a 2x4, and it's fenced off so that it looks fancy and perfect, and the media have to stay far away from it.
Oh.
So the California Securities Commission finds out that the cars don't exist, and now it's a major case of fraud, and they seek her out. When they go to Texas to arrest her, she's not at home. They finally track her to a rental property in Miami.
Okay.
She is arrested, and she is fingerprinted, and then comes the twist.
Ooh, 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 she's a ghost.
She was born a male and previously charged for involvement in counterfeiting.
Ooh,
following her arrest.
Interesting.
Following her arrest, Carmichael's bail was paid. I love this. I love this. Carmichael's bail was paid by a news station who was guaranteed the rights to her story. But once she got out, she hit the road.
Oh, man.
So she jumps bail with her 5 kids. Now, I know what you're thinking, Marissa. How does she have 5 kids if she was born a male? So, she disappears with a bunch of money. It turns out that she was the previous identity, Jerry Dean Michael,
that she was actually a woman beforehand.
That would be great.
She was actually a woman than a man.
Michael was married to Vivian Barrett, but they were divorced, I think. Okay. I mean, it just says ex-wife. To that end, she didn't die. They interviewed her in 1975 about the relationship, so she wasn't dead when all this stuff went down. So I don't really know why she didn't want the kids, but
interesting.
Whatever.
She was a deadbeat.
Vivian said, they call me Mom, and they call her Mama Liz, or something like that.
Okay.
So, after the episode of Unsolved Mysteries aired in 1989, authorities found her in a town called Dale.
I thought that was going to be the Balsh town.
Which is a Balshy move, because if you remember, the car was called the Dale.
Yeah, yeah. Wow.
So they finally found her. She had to face the music. They took her back to California. She served 32 months for her crimes, and she was released. Then she returned. I know. But she was really old at the time, so I'm wondering if that played a part.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
She was arrested in 89. She served 2.5 years. Then she was released. She went back to Texas where her kids lived, because she was living in Texas with her kids. There was one line in one of the articles that said that she forced her children to sell flowers in Texas.
Okay.
But she herself was a flower seller, and I don't know, maybe if it's a family business, you got your kids out there pushing flowers too. It's hard to track down a lot of the personal parts of this, because I really did want to maybe find an article that interviewed one of the children as an adult or something like that to get some perspective. I also tried to find her obituary, but it's hard to find it because I don't know what name she died under.
Oh, okay.
I know that doesn't sound right, but yeah, there were Liz Carmichael, Jerry Dean Morgan, and then in the end, her pseudonym was Catherine Elizabeth Brown. She died of cancer in 2004.
Okay.
That is my whole topic.
Oh, I mean, it was cool.
But I'm like, how come this isn't like a movie made by like David O. Russell or something?
Yeah, that's weird.
And it's very interesting because it corresponds a lot to, you know, our environmental concerns today.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're paying close attention to another story, I believe it was Refinery 29 that said...
Oh! I like that you sourced them.
Liz Carmichael walked so that Elizabeth Holmes could run. Because
Is Elizabeth Holmes the one with the weird voice?
Yes, and Theranos, the blood supply company, where she had a fake prototype that never ever worked, but she still was out there raking and go left and right, and they charged her with fraud, all this sort of stuff, and it was very similar in terms of how... Yeah, they just sort of, you know, created the situation. Now, one political cartoon sort of had her standing up to all the other oil-based car manufacturers as, like, you know, somebody who was fighting back against the establishment. So
that
really
sucks that it was all fraud.
Yeah, but still interesting nonetheless.
And
certainly weird. So that was, I just found that...
Pretending to be a woman at that time is interesting because that's not a thing that would benefit the average person.
I apologize that I don't know exactly where in the story, because I was shifting between so many articles, I kind of got myself confused. But she did start hormone treatment to fully transition into a woman when they raided her.
Wait, when was this?
That's the thing. I don't know I don't know if that was when they arrested her in 89, but it started out, like, she was portraying a woman as early as 73. I think.
Seems so progressive, beyond the times, doesn't it?
My heart was warmed when I read the account of the ex-wife, who was like, yeah, they call me mom, they call her Mom Liz. It's normal,
wow.
It's fine, everything's okay.
I love it.
But again, they did separate for some reason. Maybe it was because she was a criminal. Maybe it's because it created some sort of friction in the relationship. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah.
A lot of different reasons people break up. So,
interesting.
So yeah, I just remember I saw this for a couple of minutes. Yeah, in an Unsolved Mysteries, and they were like, update. She has been captured. And I was like, oh my gosh. She looked really, really rough. When they arrested her.
For some reason, I've been listening to your whole thing. I kept thinking it was in the 1920s.
Yeah, that would be fun.
Don't know why I kept thinking.
Probably because I don't know. Cars didn't see. People are making new cars today, and it doesn't seem like it's happening. But you're right. In the 20s, it's like, oh yeah, that's when new cars happened.
Yeah.
We've just been making the same cars ever since.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I guess so. Yeah, yeah. That's cool.
So I just wanted to share that with people because I thought it was pretty interesting. And yeah, I mean, I don't know how to say this right, but in some ways I'm like, props to this person. And then in other ways, but isn't that like a story that we all want to hear? Like, certainly an imperfect person. If you focus on the one side of the story about transitioning to a woman, she's a champion. If you focus on the other one, she's a villain. And it's just, you know, but then also like, are you a villain if you're robbing from the rich? It's always sort of questionable. She certainly wasn't giving it to the poor, but still.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I leave all those moral judgments to you, the listener. And thanks for listening to that about Liz Carmichael. You got any questions or any thoughts,
Marissa? Just give us a call and tell us about your moral judgment that you chose to weigh upon her. I'm curious to know how judgy our listeners are.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. At 570-POD-1-1.
Or you can leave it in an iTunes review, which we sometimes check. I haven't looked.
I mean, I just assume nobody's fucking reviewing us.
We got enough to show stars, and again, we thank all of you who contributed to that mission.
Oh, absolutely. The fact that we can show stars means a lot to us, but I just assume no one reviews us anymore. If you gave us a new iTunes review, please slide into my DMs at Riz Vandal and tell me so I can
screenshot it, send it to Marissa, and we'll talk about it.
It's time for part two.
I'm going to talk about, hear me out, the first movie star.
Okay.
Calm down, Marissa.
Okay.
Now, if you haven't been paying attention, Marissa and I have been unapologetically doing mismatch episodes. Mostly it's because we're a little out of sync with each other right now.
Yeah, that's okay. No one's
clamoring
for us to do linked ones.
After we did a bunch of split episodes, we started to sort of forget that we could, not have to, but that we could have linked topics. So this week, I really wanted to talk about somebody because this episode is coming out on February 1st. Of 2019, which begins Women's History Month.
When is Women's History Month?
February.
Whatever.
I mean, I hope.
Thanks for mansplaining it to me.
Black History Month is in February. Women's History Month is in March.
Sorry. Okay.
I wanted to tell you about a woman named Florence Lawrence, who is a personal hero of mine. And as I read more and more about her, I was like, oh my gosh, I love this lady. Oh my gosh, I love this lady more. Oh my gosh.
I'm sorry, her name is Florence?
Florence? Lawrence. Yes.
Okay, interesting.
It should be noted that I am working off of a Wikipedia article and that I have to scroll because of the weather, my thumbs are all beaten up, so I can't type correctly. Anyway. So I have to work off a Wikipedia article that I copy and pasted stuff from. But she was born Florence Annie Brigwood, January 2nd, 1886, in Hamilton, Ontario, Canada. So she's Canadian. That's one thing. She is often
that makes you like her more?
No, not really. But she is referred to as the first movie star and the first film actor to be named publicly.
Okay.
I don't know if y'all heard about this. In cinema's formative years, silent screen actors were not named like in credits because studio owners feared that fame might lead them to more demands for higher wages, and so they just didn't give people names. And so this woman was in 300 films in her life, and she wasn't credited for most of them because that's just the way that it was. But she was, if I'm not mistaken, the first person to be outed as a film actor. I read somewhere else that some people thought that film acting was like cheap and that stage acting was more genuine. And so
I could believe that.
In order to keep getting stage jobs, if you were in a movie, you didn't want your name to be attached to it because, you know, it sort of cheapened your talent. Anyway, yeah. In 1906, she was hired to play Daniel Boone's daughter in Daniel Boone, Pioneer Days in America. And the only reason she got the part, well, I mean, she had a little bit of acting experience and she was raised in sort of in the arts and in drama. But she mostly got the part because she knew how to ride a horse. She got a part and her mother got a part, and each were paid $5 a day to work for 2 weeks outdoor, and it was freezing most days. She did 60 more films with this company called Biograph. And in a lot of places, she is dubbed as the Biograph Girl, but there's actually another actress that has the same sort of nickname. So there's actually a musical done about the other one, who I think, if I'm not mistaken, is named Mary Perkins. But okay. Then there's this woman, too, whose life, by the way, I don't know much about Mary Perkins, but this woman who I'm about to tell you, Florence Lawrence, her life is freaking crazy. So,
I feel like all the actors and actresses back then, lives were really crazy.
They must have been. I don't know, but I'm going to get to why I like Florence Lawrence the most, and so far, we haven't even scraped the surface.
Okay.
So she was in like a bunch of movies for this one company, and then she sort of hooked up with a guy, like a director, and the director was like, let's start our own company.
You mean before... they connected or they sexually hooked up?
Oh, thank you. They got married.
Okay.
And so like she had this thing going for a little while, but in March of 1910, when she left Biograph, the studio that she did about 60 movies with, and she was going to another one, which was shortened to IMP, I forget. It's like Independent Movie Productions or something like that. So there's this guy who runs Independent Moving Pictures or whatever it's called, IMP. I don't know how to say his name. I feel really bad about that, but it's L-A-E.
Try to say it. I want to hear it.
I'm going to tell you first so we can both try. L-A-E-M-M-L-E.
Lemle. That's his first name or first?
That's his last name.
Yeah, Lemle.
So Lemle, which I'm not really sure of that say.
Shut up.
Maybe it's a silent second L, and it's Lemle. Like lame.
Lemle.
So this is what happens.
Cut that out.
She leaves one company, and then she's going to start working at another company. But here's the way that it happened. Her husband was like looking for other work, like trying to make more money, you know, get some. And back then it was a little different. And so what happened was the studio had got word that her husband was looking for new work. And so he fired both of them.
Oh.
Then the guy who runs the new studio that they're going to spreads a rumor that Lawrence Florence died in a car accident.
Why?
And then,
after
the rumor catches on, they start to put out advertisements that she's going to be in their next picture. And so people are like, oh my God, she's not dead. We have to go see her next movie.
That's weird, Pete.
It is weird. But if you think about it, it's kind of not too weird based on the stunts that celebrities pull today in order to try to get attention for things.
None of them fake their death.
I don't know how complicit she was in this, but okay. What happens is they schedule her to make a personal appearance in St. Louis, Missouri in March of 1910 with the leading man in the movie. So she goes out to St. Louis, and the fans were so excited to see her and to learn that she was not dead that they rushed her in a frenzy and tore her clothes off. And
I mean, so, that sounds about right.
A lot of times, people will credit this to the start of the star system, where you could put somebody on such a pedestal and sort of just make money by putting a person in a movie, even if the movie was sort of like a pile of garbage.
Oh, cool. That's fun.
And eventually, Florence Lawrence, not because it's so alliterative, but she does become a household name. Her fame, though, also proved what studio executives feared, which is that if someone becomes more famous, they will make more demands for money.
Yeah, no shit, bitch.
So Florence Lawrence used to get paid on a daily basis. So if you work Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, you get paid for 3 days. She pushed to get paid on a weekly basis so that no matter how many days she worked that week, she got paid the same amount of money, which led her to getting paid for 7 days, not just 3 days, or maybe like 5 days, not just 3 days. So she actually did start to make more money. And again, people wanted her in their movies so bad, so they would pay it.
Yeah.
Not only this, but there was a movie that she was in 1915 called Pawns of Destiny. In this particular movie, there's supposed to be a fire that takes place. And she was playing in a scene with Matt Moore, co-star, in which they were to be rescued.
I love him.
In which they were to be rescued from a burning building. In the filming of the scene, they were trapped. Miss Lawrence could have jumped to immediate safety, but chose instead to go back into the flames and aid Moore. Matt Moore, not just aid more people.
I'm sorry, is this real or in the movie?
It's real.
Oh.
Both of them were burned, and Lawrence suffered an injured back and scars. She actually fell during this thing, and I think this might be the first time she starts to have spinal cord issues.
Oh, no.
Yeah, so she suffered a serious fall. That's right. I have the details now, which fractured her spine. She went into shock for months. She returned to work, but she collapsed after the film was complete. Basically, her husband talked her into doing this scene, so she goes, that's it. We're going to get divorced.
Oh.
What's worse is the studio that she was working for at the time refused to pay her medical bills, and so she felt a little betrayed, but she also had a bunch of money, so she was able to sort of pay for stuff and, you know, that sort of thing.
Couldn't she just sue them?
I don't think that was sort of a thing that you could get away with back then.
I guess.
But the strain, so she tries to come back to movies, but the strain on her body is so big that actually one time she suffered a relapse and she was completely paralyzed because of her spinal problems for 4 straight months. So I think after that she was like, yeah, I'm not going to do this anymore.
Yeah.
I still didn't get to the part that makes me love Florence Lawrence.
Yeah, like I like her, but like, yeah, I don't.
You're still only going to like her by the end of this. But here's some more stuff.
So
okay?
Does this presentation say more about you than it says about Florence Lawrence?
Oh, it says a lot about me. So she was married 3 times. She had no kids. Her first marriage was to the guy that I talked about already. His name is Harry Salter. In 1908, they remained married until... Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. I guess it's worth mentioning that she says she wants to divorce him after this fire incident that takes place. But he is also very theatrical and dramatic. And he basically, like, wins her back or something like that. And ultimately, he dies.
How? Trying to win her back?
Just dies. I didn't really do a lot of research on him. No, not that. So next, she marries an automobile salesman named Charles.
Oh, God, I don't know why I thought the word salesman wasn't going to come after that.
She married an automobile. And that is why I love Florence Lawrence. The first woman to marry a car. So she marries Charles Byrne Woodring in 1921. They separate in 1929. And what I love about this is that, again, thinking about the time period in which this is taking place in the 20s, it's not generally common that a woman is granted a divorce or like a woman can file for the divorce.
Hey, can you remind me what year this is again? I missed.
This is 1929 when it's happening.
Oh, shit. Yeah, no way.
And basically, she's like, I paid for most of... So this guy ran a car business, but he also had a cosmetics business. And she sort of was the seed money to start the cosmetics business.
Yeah.
And then he just sort of disappeared.
Like, literally?
Not literally disappears, but he just sort of... Basically, the reason that she won the divorce is under the sort of theory of abandonment. He sort of just left her. And... What I love about this is that normally back in these days, if the man and woman split, maybe the woman wouldn't get as much. She was granted half of all of his things, you know, that they sort of got out of the partnership. And so I thought that was also pretty interesting.
Okay.
In 1933, she marries somebody for the third time. This is Henry Bolton. And Henry Bolton turns out to be an abusive a-hole. And he beats her. And then she also divorces him later on.
How old is she by her third marriage?
It's 1933, and she was born in 1886.
Okay.
So she is 40?
I don't know, math.
Maybe somewhere in her 40s. They were only married for 5 months, so...
Are you going to tell me what it's a part that makes you love her?
I'm there. The Besides her film career, okay. Florence Lawrence is credited with designing the first auto-signaling arm, a predecessor to the modern turn signal.
Uh-oh! Yeah, guys. Pete is really big on his turn signals. So, I get it now. I get it.
Along with the first mechanical brake signal. So when you hit on the brakes... You know how the lights go on in the back? It wasn't necessarily that the lights went on in the back, but it indicated that you were pushing on the brakes.
There are a couple stories about, like, old-timey movie actresses inventing crazy things, useful things.
This is sort of tied into her marrying the automobile salesman because she just loved cars. And,
That's cool.
And again, in these days, it wasn't common that a woman was allowed to drive a car. But did, and not only did she drive the cars, but she, like, knew all these things about them, and there's pictures of her, like, with cars and driving cars and all sorts of stuff, and it's just really cool, I thought. As you may imagine, she did not patent these inventions, and as a result, she received no credit or profit from either of those two inventions. So
nobody got money, or did, like, a man take the credit?
Well, you know, a company is like, hey, that turn signal looks good. Let's put them on our cars.
Well, and then the company good.
And then the company sells more cars because they're safer. So theoretically, you know, the company makes more money. But no, it's not like somebody said, "Oh, that's my invention. I'm going to take credit for it."
It was
just that, you know, kind of like Ben Franklin with like one of his stoves or something. He was just like,
"You know what? We all know that."
I don't know why I remember something like that from school.
Ben Franklin and his stoves.
You know, old Benny and his stove. After this and her injuries and everything like that, by the way, I sort of just dropped the car thing at the end there. It happened sort of in the middle of her story. But after the whole fire thing.
When did her drug addiction take place? Because that always has a thing with those old timey stars.
It's interesting that you sort of mentioned that because I don't think that she was addicted to drugs.
Really?
I think if she was alive today, she would definitely be on opioids because her problem was that she suffered from pain constantly because of this fall.
Yeah.
It was a different time. There really wasn't a great way to sort of heal this thing. And also there was the rise of talkies and everything like that. And so she was getting bit parts and things like that, but she wasn't the star up front. In mid-1937, Lawrence was diagnosed with what her doctor described as, quote, a bone disease which produces anemia and depression.
Okay.
There are some theories as to what it was, but due to her poor health and chronic pain, she became depressed, but she attempted to keep working.
What are the theories that it would be like in today's medicine?
I really don't know how to say a lot of them, but like some suggest a rare bone marrow disease. Some suggest something called myelofibrosis. And another one is agnogenic myeloid metaplasia.
Okay.
Again,
I don't know
go to Wikipedia, guys.
I don't know why I asked.
Those all have links if you want to find out more about them. But again, I don't have thumbs today. So after that, she dies in December 28th in 1938. You may recall that I just told you in mid-1937 she was diagnosed with this disease. About a year later, year and a half later, she dies. She dies because she eats cough syrup and ant paste in her home.
Ant paste?
Paste that you would put down to catch ants.
Oh, I thought it was of ants.
Okay, all right.
Okay.
I'll let you go on that one then.
Okay.
Her death was ruled a probable suicide, attributing that to her ill health. She lived with a sort of like housemate named Robert Brinlow and his sister. She left.
Was she that poor?
No, I think it was just like, you know, living in West Hollywood. She wasn't making a ton of money. It wasn't like she was poor, but like living in Hollywood, these are basically like roommates, housemates.
Yeah, okay.
She left a sad, brief suicide note. And after her death, the Motion Picture and Television Fund paid for her funeral, which was held on December 30th, and for her unmarked grave in the Hollywood Cemetery. Her grave remained unmarked until 1991 when a British actor who chose to remain anonymous paid for a memorial marker for Lawrence, which reads, "The Biograph Girl / the First Movie Star."
Aww.
This is why I think you might love Florence Lawrence, Marissa. As a parting note, the date of birth on Lawrence's headstone is given as 1890. But as I told you earlier, she was actually born in 1886.
Okay.
This inaccuracy was also stated on her death certificate, which was filled out by the coroner. Lawrence's biographer, Kelly R. Brown, owed the mistake to Lawrence's own brand of fiction as she routinely subtracted years off of her age.
Oh, wow.
And so that is a story about Florence Lawrence. There is a book which is called The Biograph Girl, which is mentioned right there at the end, the book that's done by Kelly R. Brown. But I thought this was interesting, too, and I thought this was really sweet and cute and tender. In 2000, a guy named William J. Mann wrote a novel called The Biograph Girl, and he basically takes facts from Lawrence's life and he blends it with fiction in a story in which she actually faked her death. And then this journalist, you know, first-person journalist sort of meets her at a nursing home and decides to write her biography and sort of bring her back into, you know, the public eye. And so that's kind of a sweet way to finish up the Wikipedia article. But it also lists...
She's a cute woman. I'm looking at a picture of her right now.
It lists so many movies that she was in, and it's crazy because back in these early days, they did one reel films, which are shorts, for all intents and purposes, but there's just so many of them, and it's crazy that somebody could be in that many movies.
Movies were shorter, though, right?
I'm finding a number of them are about 15 minutes long.
Oh, wow. Okay. That'd explain it.
Of course, the whole reason that I discovered Florence Lawrence is because one day I wanted to pay tribute to the person who invented the turn signal, because turn signals are so important, guys. And it's no sweat off your back to actually use one. In fact, if you don't use one, you're probably the biggest asshole in the world. The biggest.
Some people who I really like in Philadelphia don't use turn signals, like, ever.
My uncle doesn't. Ever.
Is it a point of, like, a point he makes?
He just doesn't. It's almost like he didn't, like, when he learned how to drive a car, nobody showed him it was there.
I'll give him a pass if that's the case. Totally. No, otherwise, no.
Our next episode is going to be our Valentine's Day episode.
Oh, why don't we talk about that?
And so we hope that you stay tuned for that.
By the way, I was looking something up while we were talking at one point, and I saw the headline, "Why Are Gender Reveal Lasagnas a Thing?" So you might like to know that, everybody.
Yeah, I don't.
By the way, if someone I know has a gender reveal party, I will not go. That's unrelated to anything, but I just want everyone to know.
I'll go for the cake, but, like, to eat cake.
I'm going to eat it now. Sorry. He made me a cake. Jealous?
Oh.
He can't see my face. It must be weird.
It is.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
I miss it, but also, your audio is still sort of, like, cut out at certain times, so maybe you should just bring the video back anyway.
It's time for... It's time for...
Marissa, do you have anything to plug?
You go first. Maybe I'll have something by the time you say that.
I don't want to plug Escape Room, the movie.
Okay, then don't!
I also don't want to plug the movie The Hum, in case you were interested and you were like, oh, I want to know more about The Hum. So you went on Amazon and you Googled, or you searched for The Hum. There is a movie called The Hum. It was done only 4 years ago. It's really bad because the whole entire movie, you should be hearing a hum. It's like the main character hears a hum, but you don't hear a hum, so you don't really, like, empathize with him at all. As I don't plug Escape Room, it might be the most forgettable movie that I'm going to see this year, but I don't regret going to see it because it did look like it was designed for me. But I'll tell you this much, just in case you're wondering, and just in case it's going to motivate you whether or not you're going to spend money to see this movie, they don't tell you who's behind the escape room, okay? I just want everybody to be clear. They're not going to tell you. So if you're watching to have the mystery solved, just don't watch it.
Okay.
Marissa, what do you got?
The new season of Riverdale. No, not the new season. Mid-season Riverdale is back. I want everyone to watch that.
Thank God.
And also, I don't need to plug anything.
No, we want to plug... our show, y'all heard. Thanks for listening. You already listened to it. Hope you liked it.
Yeah. Bye.
Bye. Bye.